Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It is Discover the Finger Lakes. And as my engineer, Jeff, reminded me, it would be a big, busy day in the Finger Lakes and around the country because it's a National Trails Day. This is a time when people would congregate on the trails and have picnics and, you know, so do work parties on the trails. And there's been so much work that's been done over the last 10 years to create the Rails to Trails. Just saw the Adirondacks got final approvals to move ahead with their Rails to Trails project or expansion. New York State has been working on a trail system that will go from basically New York City to Buffalo and up through the Adirondacks. That will probably be part of a even bigger trails project that runs down the entire East Coast. And a lot of these trails are already in place. It's the matter of creating the links, and often those links are in, you know, places that, for whatever reason, industrial zones, large private holdings, who knows, but they're, you know, sort of the easier work has been done up to this point. And I say easier, not because it's not easy, but just creating the final links is the bigger problem, more of a challenge. So, but it's happening. It's, as we continue to discover that being outside is healthy, even when there isn't a pandemic, the momentum toward outdoor exercise and spending time out on trails is moving ahead. So, don't necessarily, it's not recommended to congregate to celebrate National Trails Day. Give people space and wear a mask or have a mask with you so you can wear it if you're near people. And again, that shows respect for other people. So National Trails Day is today, and there'll probably be more people out than a usual beautiful Saturday during this shutdown period, but you can celebrate it in many ways. Trails don't need to be through the woods. You can create your own, in a sense. So again, also one of our listeners, Chris Clemens, who does the blog Exploring Upstate, was nice to send me a reminder as well that the New York State parks are beginning to charge for entry, and the beaches and day use areas are open under the state guidelines for social distancing and things, and the fees for entry begin today. But there are some, there's a cool passport program, I think, where you can pay one fee per year and have access to all the state parks. That might be a fun way to explore more state parks. The number of the state parks will be very busy, especially on weekends. Those that are near more populated areas, but there also are very large state parks that are not as busy, and maybe it's a reason to take a road trip and visit some of those state parks you've never heard of that are out of the way and won't be as busy, especially if you can go during the week. The weekends certainly are going to be busy. You have a favorite trail or favorite place that you like to go out, hike perhaps, email me, michael@saverlife.com. And love to hear about some cool places. Chris Clemens at exploringupstate.com posted one of, I think, Sterling Nature Center up near Lake Ontario, and has some photos and article about some of the herons that were nesting way up in these dead trees. It just looked like something completely out of Dr. Seuss. Not that herons don't fit in perfectly well with Dr. Seuss, but their nests way up in these starkly dead trees in a swamp where the rising water at some point killed off the trees, but they're still standing. I don't know how the herons figure out which ones are likely to stand, you know, for the rest of the spring while they're nesting, because there must be some of them that fall periodically, because they are dead. But you'd have to set up some sort of, you know, 24-hour camera on those trees. Of course, I don't know how you figure out whether one falls at night. I guess you hear the sound of it in the recording, but I've, you know, it's one of those strange things you wonder when you drive by these areas with lots of dead trees and sort of a swampy area, how long those last. But he has some cool photos of the herons that are nesting, and lots of other posts that he's done about upstate New York, all kinds of unusual, beautiful, and often lesser known destinations that he's discovered and written about and taken photos. So exploringupstate.com, you can get more details there, and follow him on Facebook, Instagram, see what he's posting. He's also part of Rochester FoodNet, and was the key person to redesign my website. So saverlife.com has a new website as of about 2 months ago, something like that, and really easy for me to use. I think did a pretty awesome job on it. So check out saverlife.com if you haven't. There are archives there, so you can go back and see some of the, or listen to some of the shows from previous weeks, and we'll be adding to those as we work backward, adding some of the older interviews and shows over time. So, but there's, I don't know how many weeks of shows are up there. I didn't count them. 6 or 7 weeks, something like that. Saverlife.com. If you have any comments about the website, about how to make it better, what you liked about it, what you, if anything frustrated you about using it, please love that feedback. This is a, you know, it's a work in progress. It's like my garden. My garden is always a work in progress. You know, there's always things to improve, things to change, and the same is true of, you know, of a website. But after having my original website for, I don't know how many years I had it. I got to try and figure out when I launched the website originally. It functioned beautifully. It worked well for years, 15 years maybe. But it was definitely overdue for reinvigorating it and revamping it. And love the way it looks. So there'll be a lot they'll be adding to it over the next few weeks, next few months, as continue to improve it. And saverlife.com. As I mentioned in the previous hour, I've got a gift card for one of our listeners. It's a $100 gift card to Sarah's Garden Center in Brockport, and would love to send that to one of our listeners. You just need to send me an email, and I'll do a drawing after I assign random numbers to those emails. Again, if you don't have email, you can send me a postcard, but then you'll be in a drawing for next weekend's gift card. I'm going to try and highlight a different sponsor each weekend. So Sarah's Garden Center in Brockport this weekend. And again, beautiful time of year to go out there and check out their gardens. I've talked in the past about the destination garden centers of our area, like Sarah's, like Palmeter's, which is very close to our radio station between Avon and Geneseo. Sarah's garden center. There's Grandpa's Nursery up in Sodus. A beautiful place to take a drive. There's Bristol's Garden Center, which is in Victor. Bricolo Nursery and Garden Center, which is on 441. And by the way, I mentioned this on the gardening show, but I got a praying mantis egg case in the mail. It's actually ordering nematodes, which are used to use them to treat grubs in lawns and black vine weevils and some other pests in yards. And so I ordered these nematodes that I've used in the past, and they sent me praying mantis egg cases by mistake. So these egg cases look pretty simple. They're just little, you know, about the size of a cherry tomato maybe, and kind of tan in color. But the crazy thing is that 100 to 200 little praying mantises are going to climb out of this thing at some point. And I really don't have room for 100 or 200 praying mantis insects climbing around. And you have to distribute them quickly because they will eat each other if you don't. They're not the best beneficial insect around, but they are certainly one of the coolest beneficial insects around. They're not one of the best beneficial insects because they eat good bugs and bad bugs. They just eat pretty much anything. And the other beneficial insects are more specific, like ladybugs. They attack aphids and very little else. But praying mantis will go after everything. But they are really cool. I mean, they're like sticks that walk. And so what's going to happen is, I think when these hatch, and we don't know when they're going to hatch, at some point in the next couple weeks, they like warmer weather. So that kind of starts the clock ticking for when they will hatch out. And then I think at that point, Bricolo will put out on social media that the praying mantis have hatched. Come and get one if you like. And they've got some little pouches that people can kind of seal them in to take them home and release them in their yards. So it's going to be kind of fun. As soon as they hatch out, I'm heading over there because I want to see them. I just didn't want to have 100 or 200 in my yard, which I guess that's normally what happens. I mean, that's what they do when they lay egg cases. They have, I've seen them, but I've never seen the egg cases hatch out. Now, my engineer just told me in my earphones that it hurts when they bite you. I've never had a praying mantis bite me. Doesn't draw blood, did it, Jeff? No. Okay, no blood. He said, surprising for the size of the praying mantis. So if you know, these babies are tiny, tiny things. And from what I saw of one of the videos I watched of them hatching out, they must have been a quarter inch long or so, less than that, eighth of an inch long maybe. And then they get much bigger. And they're really fun. So this seemed like a good home for them. And if you follow Bricolo Nursery and Garden Center on Facebook, Instagram, those are probably the places you'll hear first about the praying mantis emerging. It's going to be exciting. By the way, Bricolo has also been really helpful over the last several years, as has the birdhouse on Monroe Avenue, in helping raise monarch butterflies. And I'd love to know, if you see a monarch butterfly, send me a note. michael@saverlife.com. They are getting further north. We'll probably see them in the next, I would guess, the next week, maybe. You can go to monarchwatch.org and follow where they've been sighted. I didn't check it in the last few days, but the milkweeds are tall enough, and that's kind of what the monarchs follow, are the milkweed, which is what they lay their eggs on. So let me know if you see some monarchs. And over each of the last, I guess now 4 years, I've found and raised about 150 monarch butterflies from eggs in my yard. But not me alone. I've farmed them out to Bricolo and the birdhouse, who've been very helpful. And the reason I do it, really, I mean, if the caterpillars, you know, could survive in my yard, I would not try to raise them myself, because I could just watch them in my yard, and they would probably flourish even more if I didn't try to raise them indoors. But I've watched the monarchs lay eggs on the milkweed in my yard for years, and I've seen the caterpillars, tiny ones, hatch. They don't leave the plant once they hatch. But only once in a decade have I seen a caterpillar bigger than like an eighth of an inch long. The spiders eat them. And so that's why I raise them indoors, because otherwise the spiders eat them all. I have a lot of milkweed and a lot of monarch eggs and apparently a lot of spiders. So that's the reason behind why I raise those monarch butterflies. So if you're interested in, and I've had a number of listeners who've helped raise some monarchs. I've dropped them off, or they've picked up some of the milkweed with the eggs on it, or the caterpillars. Let me know if you're interested. Michael@saverlife.com, and I'll put you on my list of monarch eggs. So you have to take part of the plant with you with the egg on it. You can't take the egg off the milkweed. But it is a lot of fun to watch that process. And again, kind of connects you with nature. And if you don't have to have much of a garden to have a lot of Mother Nature in it. And I live in the city of Rochester. I've got a ordinary city lot, which is a tenth of an acre, something like that. And a lot of that's occupied by a house and a garage and a driveway and a sidewalk. But the rest of it is pretty much, well, weeds and plants. In fact, I got some weeding to do today just to make sure the city doesn't ask me to mow my area between the sidewalk and the street. I wouldn't be surprised if they did ask me to mow that. It's intentional, but it is a little out of control. So that's part of my job for today, is to rein it in a little bit so it looks more intentional and a little less crowded with things. As I mentioned often during the gardening show, if you have plants in your garden that you can't identify, annuals, perennials, shrubs, trees, vegetables, if you don't know what it is, you probably can't figure out what to do with it, whether you should prune it, whether you should move it out of the sun, whatever the question might be, and happy to try to help you identify it. Just send me a couple photos, michael@saverlife.com, and I'll try to identify it for you. Poison ivy also. I was just driving down a street in my neighborhood that I don't normally drive down, just taking a different route, avoiding some traffic, I think. Or maybe changed my mind on where I was going, I think, and so I just turned down this other street, which was a really pretty street. It had lots of sycamore trees. Really a gorgeous street. And I have this sixth sense for poison ivy. There was poison ivy growing up the trunk of one of the trees, one of the street trees on the street. And so I got to go back and leave the people a note just saying, not sure you're aware, but that is poison ivy growing up that tree in your front yard. And you want to avoid it. You want to avoid weed eaters getting into it. Weed eaters just throw that oil everywhere. And mowers to a lesser degree. And of course, then, you know, let's say you mow through it and then you walk through those clippings and you've got sandals on, or you shouldn't mow with sandals on anyway, but, you know, say some low shoes or something. That's, there's a lot of that oil just sitting out there when you cut the leaves like that. So one of our neighbors was mowing near some poison ivy, which I pointed out to them. It was actually the neighbor right behind me. And yeah, I suggested that they might want to wash their ankles a little bit, because there actually was a fair amount of poison ivy. What I failed to mention, I should have, is that if you're trying to wash poison ivy off, use cold water, not hot water. And that goes against my initial thought, which is poison ivy is gives off an oil. If I use hot water, it will help to remove the oil faster. I mean, if you, let's say you have oil in a pan, you're washing the pan, you use hot water. You don't use cold water with oil if you're trying to clean a pan. But the thing to remember with poison ivy, and this goes for giant hogweed and other things that I hope you never get into, but if you do, you use cold water because that closes the pores of your skin, which once you know that, well, that makes sense. So if you think you have poison ivy, wash with soap and with cold water as soon as you can. Again, cold water keeps the pores of your skin closed, and warm water, hot water, will just open the pores of your skin, and it will absorb it potentially faster than you can wash it off. Again, it's an oil, so keep that in mind. And I saw poison ivy at two other homes in our neighborhood. You know, so within basically a block and a half of my house, I found poison ivy regrowing on several where I'd seen it before and alerted people. And some new sightings of poison ivy, again, seeded by the birds, including the house right behind me. So if you don't know what poison ivy is, it is time to figure that out and help other people that you might be out hiking. I know it's National Trails Day. We need a National Poison Ivy Day just to build awareness of what it is and how prevalent it is. I was in Lakeville earlier this week, very close to the radio station, actually going down to visit Twister's Ice Cream in Livonia, and had their churro cinnamon ice cream on a chocolate waffle cone. That was probably a brilliant combination. Chris Clemens from Exploring Upstate had posted a photo, I think it was the Rochester Food Net Instagram, of that cinnamon churro ice cream cone, and it drew me there like a magnet, and it was delicious. But I wanted to enjoy the ice cream, not drive, because they didn't have any outdoor seating at Twister's in Livonia, at least at that point. For one thing, this was a big ice cream cone. I ordered small, and it was large. I don't know what you get when you order large, but it would probably take three people to eat it. It was like three scoops of ice cream for this small cinnamon churro. And so I couldn't drive and consume this, so I went over to the park right there at the north end of Canisius Lake. And, you know, sitting there, enjoying the view of the lake, looking at the poison ivy that was growing over the edge of the parking lot right next to me. lush poison ivy, beautiful, gorgeous leaves. Also growing up a tree which looked like someone had cut that, and it was wilting. So someone was trying to control the poison ivy to some degree, but it was this big area of it's kind of the edge of the parking lot for the park that was all poison ivy, and so that's one of the reasons it fools people, is it climbs trees, can climb 60 feet high, but it also grows as a ground cover. It also can grow as a shrub. It can, and I've seen this in Cape Cod numerous times. It grows up 4 or 5 feet on its own and doesn't need to climb something necessarily. So again, if you think you might have poison ivy, send me a photo. Because of my website, I get emails from people around the country looking to have me identify poison ivy. Usually isn't, but occasionally it is, and hopefully I can save them some itching and just miserable. You know, poison ivy usually isn't dangerous. People can have like anaphylactic shock if they happen to be prone to that, but it's not something that's common. Not as common with bees, but you hear about it more with bees and anaphylactic shock. But it just, you know, it creates these welts on your skin, and it looks terrible, itches, and just lasts forever. So you want to work to avoid poison ivy, and it is it may well be in your yard right now. I was trying to figure this out, and I don't know how it varies from city to suburb, but just judging by the poison ivy I found in my neighborhood here in the city of Rochester, these are drive-by sightings of it. I am not actively looking for it. I'm not walking with a microscope through people's yards looking for poison ivy. I wonder what percentage of properties I could find poison ivy growing on, here in the city or in the suburbs. I think it would be a surprisingly high percentage. And I've joked about doing a reality TV show called Poison Mike. And, basically the TV show would be following me hunting for poison ivy in people's yards. It'd be a terrible show. I mean, it's not a good idea. But we do need people out there scouting for poison ivy, just to keep kids and dogs and other things. And, people these days with the shutdown, although reopenings are beginning, and people are spending more time out in their yards, they're going to be exposed to more poison ivy. By the way, from what I can gather from the wineries around the Finger Lakes, most of them are not reopening right now, although I think technically they can with outdoor tastings. It seems like most of the wineries have chosen to wait until the official Phase 3 reopening, June 12th. I'm not sure what's driving that. It looked like the only winery that I could see that opened outdoor tastings, and I think is open this weekend, and again, they are thrown in the category of restaurants, which now can serve outdoors, and that was a change in the planning. Rather than waiting for Phase 3, they moved up outdoor seating, reopening for restaurants and wineries and breweries. It seems like relatively few, at least of the wineries, have chosen to move that date up, and they're sticking with June 12th. Maybe because they have staffing set up that way. Maybe because, they feel it's safer to wait to June 12th. And maybe they are concerned about the state liquor board and, the ramifications of opening early. Even though it looks like it is possible for them to do so. So the bottom line is, I don't think you'll find many wineries open for tastings, although I would check with Zugabee's if you're looking to do that. They're on the northeast corner of Seneca Lake, and fabulous wine, lovely place. They were putting up more outdoor areas, I think, for their special events and for weddings, but that will be really helpful now with more outdoor seating. They also do live music at Zugabee's. So just around the north end of the lake from Geneva, actually still a Geneva address. But in general, like most of the wineries are holding off until June 12th, as are some restaurants. So don't assume anyone is open. Check social media. Check their websites, and if you're going there just for a specific business, maybe call first to make sure. You can email me anytime, michael@saverlife.com. We'll take a quick break. Be back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Discover the Finger Lakes on WYSL 1040, 92.1 FM. And sponsors include Glenora Wine Cellars, the Inn at Glenora and Verasian's Restaurant. And they have reopened the Inn at Glenora. They have 30 rooms, private balcony views of Seneca Lake. It is a gorgeous place to stay. And they have, as of a couple weeks ago, began bringing guests back. And again, a sign of the reopening, Glenora has been extremely careful about their plans for reopening, about their cleaning in the inn, disinfecting services or surfaces, and just in general, they're very good at planning, and so again, I feel confident in what they're doing. And it may be nice to get away and be somewhere else for a day or two, and the Inn at Glenora might be the perfect place to do that. They also are, of course, shipping wine, and looking forward to June 12th for reopening the restaurant, the tasting room, not far away. It's glenora.com for more details. They have canceled their first of their two jazz concerts scheduled for July. They have 1,500 people on the lawn. That doesn't seem like something that should probably happen. So they did cancel that for July. Keep that in mind. And a beautiful drive down the west side of Seneca Lake. They are about an hour and a half from Rochester. Glenora.com for more details. Also brought to you by Full Moon Vista Bike and Sport. They are located on University Avenue near Culver. And you can check their website for hours. They have obviously can repair bicycles. And I imagine the crush of spring bicycle repairs is probably over. And they can give you a sense for how many days it will take to give you a tune-up or some of the things they may be able to fix that on the spot, like a flat tire. You should consider getting hard case tires. That can make a world of difference, avoiding punctures. And for people that are generally comfortable with taking tires off and replacing tubes, I would have Full Moon Vista put that Kevlar tire on. It is much harder to work with than ordinary tire. One of the reasons that it doesn't puncture as easily, makes a big difference. And those tires are maybe $60, and if you can avoid a bunch of punctures over several years, It seems like a bargain to me. That's why I have them. It's again, for me, more details, go to fullmoonvista.com. Also brought to you by Billsboro Winery. They've been doing more online videos. Vinny and Kim Alaperti. You can also check my archives from the wine show and listen to them, an interview I did just a couple weeks ago. Really great people and delicious wines. And they are looking forward to reopening their tasting room. And they do have outdoor space, so that will help, where they have been doing pizza on the patio for many years. So check their website for details, BillsboroWinery.com. Again, they're located on the west side of Seneca Lake, just south of Geneva. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Discover the Finger Lakes.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes.
Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It is Discover the Finger Lakes and National Trails Day today. And I think it was, I don't know if it was Chris from Exploring Upstate or maybe my engineer Jeff who mentioned last week or a couple of weeks ago that a number of these trails are really quite wide, and that makes it just easier to have more distance compared to some areas that have very narrow trails. And keep that in mind as you're thinking about where to go outside, especially on weekends, and but also because of the shutdown and so many people furloughed or laid off or just unemployed, there are more people out and about, and it is harder to keep a social distance. And the reason to even think about all of this, wearing a mask and social distancing, is so that we can stay in this reopening mode. If we get a lot of reinfections and the hospitals start to fill up and people start dying in larger numbers from coronavirus, we are going to move backwards, and that's going to hurt business even more than it's been hurt up to this point. So be careful and be aware, and let's keep this on track. It really is not a big deal to wear a mask. I'd rather not, but I think when you're out in public, and especially at places of business, I mentioned last week, if I go into a business and the employees and a lot of the customers aren't wearing masks, I'm probably leaving and probably not coming back very soon. That doesn't give me much confidence. If I go into a business and the employees are wearing masks and maybe all or almost all the customers are wearing masks, then I feel more confident. And I'm going to go back. I'm going to stay longer and buy more things. It makes a difference to other people, and it makes a difference to the business that they have confidence and give their customers confidence. We have a special guest with us from Herd Orchards. Earlier this morning on the gardening show, we talked to Amy McAmer, and in the previous hour, talked to Amelia Sidonia, her daughter, and that was also Sue Herd McAmer's granddaughter, and we have Sue with us now. Good morning, Sue.
Hey, Michael and family. It's so nice to hear your voice. And we're so glad to be here on a beautiful, what is so rare as the day in June.
Yeah, and low humidity and brilliant sunshine.
It's true.
And for For just a little background, we'll talk a little bit about the harvest boxes that you do and things, but give us some background. You studied at Cornell, right?
I did, and did a graduate degree also at the University of Rochester in English.
I was going to say, the University of Rochester doesn't have too many agricultural degrees.
No, I was in an English degree there.
but what did you study at Cornell?
Well, actually, you know, it was pretty funny. My dad was a Cornellian. I'll tell you this bit of a story. And he said, you know, Suze, when you go to Cornell, I suggest you can take anything you want, as long as you include biology, botany, geology, chemistry, physics, agronomy, you know, blah, blah. And so I did. And so I wound up having two majors, a science degree and also in English.
And Cornell, for, as I said, your father went there, has been really one of the key research institutions in the United States, not just in our area. And we're lucky to live so close. And you and Amy have worked with Cornell in various ways for many years.
Amy is not, but you know what? Amelia, her daughter, my granddaughter, is starting at Cornell this year. She's just graduating on the 12th from high school and is going off to Cornell. Hopefully,
that's awesome.
It will all work out that it's not a virtual experience. Because
yes.
Don't you think a lot of the learning takes place not necessarily on a computer or in the classroom.
Exactly. It's not really a matter of even going to Cornell, but in terms of research and using the research that Cornell does, those are things that you apply at the farm and have for a long time, right?
That's absolutely true. And the wonderful thing is that we do know how the Cornell department heads, and particularly, let's say, at the Geneva Experiment Station, and so they would often bring to us, they do, how things like the beautiful new yellow raspberries and, you know, the wonderful new peach variety or cherry varieties, and bring them to us to test out and give our guests here at the market a chance to taste what's new and wonderful coming out of the Geneva Experiment Station and the Cornell program.
Yeah, well, one of the things you launched a few years ago are harvest boxes, and what are those?
Well, you know, it's a wonderful thing because what we do is try to assemble the peak elements to get people to have a taste of at any moment. And they would include every harvest box. So we'd created this harvest box idea. And once a week, on a Thursday, this year, we kind of go by what our customers and our bakers would like for a day. But anyway, so last year and this year, it's been on Thursday afternoons. And you can get a box that includes a standard size box that includes a beautiful bouquet, a loaf of bread, and often it's our honey oatmeal bread that's just ready for a taste of the new jam. There will be the jam of the day, usually often still warm anyway, and a half a dozen of Amelia's eggs. She has, I don't know the chicken count right now, but she packs up her eggs. And they're beautiful Araucana and Wellspring eggs that are colored. So you don't never know whether you're getting a green and pink box or green and speckled brown or blue or whatever. But so every box includes the bouquet and a loaf of the honey oatmeal bread usually, the jam of the day, half dozen eggs, and then we fill out the amount with fruits and vegetables of the season. And so usually that's about $20 worth of our favorite picks. And so this coming week, it will include our first strawberries probably still asparagus, and we do often a bundle of herbs with recipes, and we did that this past Thursday, and so a big jar of herbs, and they're just lovely, and as I say, recipes to identify the herbs and some recipes for doing them, and then whatever the picks. Right now it's strawberries, but and guess what? About the 4th of July, we are into also red raspberries, black raspberries, sweet cherries, red, white, purple, and black, and about the 15th of July, sour cherries as well. And then also we'll begin on, guess what, can you believe it, peaches and apricots, and then we're on the roll for the season, and we wind up with 70 varieties of apples. Some are antique apples, you know, old varieties like red astrakhan and northern spy, and sometimes brand new apples like the snapdragon and honeycrisp developed in Minnesota, snapdragon and ruby frost developed at the Geneva Experiment Station, our own New York apples. But so, we just love it because Amy and I do love the variety and presenting a wide variety so that you get a taste of, you know, a little bit of everything. Sweet, sour, crispy, crunchy, red, yellow, green. I would say blue, but I would then be referring to plums.
Which you have, too.
Which we do, yeah.
And the harvest boxes, the harvest boxes, Sue, are they things that you order each week, or do you get like
a
subscription?
Well, people know we're doing it. People who know we're doing it often may order for delivery for the whole season, and there's a little price advantage to that. But in general, you can order, you know, by the week or the every other week. And because it's like a little CSA, it's like a little, our own little harvest box. And sometimes people pick up every other week, or they may do every week, or they may split with a neighbor, and different ones pick up different weeks. We have one person who orders three boxes, and that's kind of fun, you know, one for her mom, one for herself, one for her daughter.
Nice.
That's great.
Yeah, and
but you
I
can
would
order whatever you want, and you can order whenever you want. We just have a grid, and when mark off, you know, in addition to your information, we would tick off the dates for you want, when you want boxes. And so certainly you don't have to get boxes if you're on vacation. Just let us know when it will be. Or, as I say, some people do. They'll have their mom get those boxes or brother or whatever. Are you still there?
Is this cookie or rhubarb pie when I stopped?
Oh, gosh. That rhubarb pie is something, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're still making them, and we will have those. But very soon we'll be into, you know, the cherry pies also. But you know what we do, Michael? We can provide a lot of those all year. Like when we are doing our rhubarb pie, we will tuck some in the freezer so that we can haul them out and present them freshly baked at any time.
It also allows people who buy the frozen ones, and I've done this a number of times, you know, part of the fun of having a pie is how it smells in your kitchen baking.
I know. It is really true. And I know you do that. Several people do that. It's great. Because the nice thing, too, is that you can order them in season and stick them in your freezer if you have space to do that. And we will give you, as you know, Michael, the baking instructions.
Right.
When you come here, we tuck that little little instruction paper in the box with the pie.
So, Sue, are there any...
Put it on the box is more likely.
Are any particular flowers right now that
in
your gardens or things that you love?
Oh, my goodness. Well, of course, it is the beautiful iris moment, and we have all colors of iris. The flags, the blue flags, we call them, off our stone wall in our backyard here at the market, but we also have the yellow ones and the big magenta iris, just gorgeous. And then we go right through the season, as you know, with beautiful flowers from our gardens. We have an acreage of flowers. We actually, believe it or not, I think we have 20 acres of flowers.
That is a lot of acres.
Yes, a lot of acres. Tell us about that.
I think 10 of those acres are hydrangeas alone.
Right. Well, the hydrangeas, Jeff and I, my husband and I, happen to live directly across from a 2-acre patch of the PG hydrangeas, which in the moonlight we can see right outside our bedroom window, moon shining, and here are the PGs just shining at us. It's just great. Well, you know, I think it's the best of all worlds to live on a fruit and flower farm. And having grown up also with the domestic animals, I'm thinking, wow, it is it's complicated to do any kind of farming, but it is so nice not to have to worry about, you know, my parents, my dad and grandpa delivering a calf in the middle of a zero degree January night or something. It's nice to be able to concentrate on those things that generally survive.
Right, right. And again, lots of apples, but so many other different kinds of fruit. And Amy was telling us this morning earlier on the gardening show that the stone fruit, the peaches and other things with survived, and you're going to have a crop of pretty much all of those, I think, right?
Oh, we are, yes. And it's so exciting and wonderful because we quickly peak, you know, when it gets to the iffy 33 degrees. We go out and check buds, and I can't do that very well because I remember the days when my dad was here, Grandpa, and we would pop the blossom open, and if the center was black, it didn't survive. If it was green and swelling, it did. But I found that way too much pressure. So I am one. I mean, people approach this in a different way, but in different ways. But I'm one who waits until I see them on the tree. And you could right now, Michael, take a look at our cherry trees that surround our market, and you will see little all growing green bouquets of, you know,
nice
hard green cherries. Oh, my gosh. So wonderful.
It is. Well, Sue, thank you for giving us the update. And, again, the Herd Orchards is open on Thursdays and Saturdays and today until 2, right?
Yes. And,
gosh,
thank you for calling. It's nice to be in touch again after a strange winter.
It's absolutely, and enjoy this beautiful weather. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Sue Hurd-McAmer from Herd Orchards and the matriarch of the family there at the farm, 3 generations working at the farm in just west of Brockport on Route 104. And if you're interested in the harvest boxes that are available on Thursdays, you can reach them at 638-8838. Herdorchards.com. And I'm heading out to get a rhubarb pie after the broadcast. If you're looking for a specific pie like rhubarb, call in advance, have them reserve one for you, just to make sure they don't bake unlimited numbers of these. Also, a number of other businesses are reopening or have in the last few days, places like the Artful Gardener on Mount Hope Avenue, Arkhamage on Monroe Avenue. They reopened on June 1st, and again, businesses, I think, pretty much universally that I've run into, asking that you wear a mask, which seems entirely reasonable.